Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Unlike a lot of radio and TV personalities, David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation, only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. And now, brace yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes the unfiltered truth about money, investing, and retirement planning from a man who will give it to you straight. No bias and no spin. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. I have another special guest. They are all special. And you know what's special about today's guest? We're going to talk about savings. So we're flattered. I'm almost speechless, but not quite. We have Dr. Bridget Madrian, who is an Aetna Professor of Public Policy and Corporate Manager at the Harvard Kennedy School. I promised her I would get that right. Bridget, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you. And so I told people you're with Harvard. You've served at the faculty of University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. I got a long list of resume here. You have been involved with the Bureau of Economic Research. You've co-edited a Journal of Human Resources. I mean, this is quite a resume. Now, so I love the fact that you have this all this experience dealing with the financial topic. And the one that we want to focus in on today is savings. Now, here's the obvious question. What does Harvard have to do with savings and public policy?
Well, savings is an important aspect of public policy because one of the biggest government expenditures is on social programs for the elderly, including Social Security, including things like Medicaid and supplemental security income for elderly who are in poverty. And, you know, we are staring at a sea wave of individuals who are hitting retirement. The baby boomers are on the cusp of retirement and are going to be moving into this older segment of our population. And whether or not they are prepared for retirement will have a huge impact on the fiscal sustainability of these programs for the elderly and the overall position of the government balance sheet. So it's a really important public policy issue. And, you know, at Harvard, we have lots of faculty, including myself, who are interested in thinking about these hard problems and understanding what's the cause of the problems and how can we change things to help improve outcomes.
Excellent, Bridget. So if I try to break it down, the bottom line here is if we don't help people figure out how to save for themselves and give them the tools and the understanding to do that, then we as a government, we as a country are going to be faced with a lot of challenges in either providing financial support to them or dealing with other very bad consequences.
Absolutely. You put it very well.
So we're all in this together.
Yes.
All right. So in your work then, you've done a lot, I'm sure, a lot of analysis and study and research and looking at how people are saving, how they're motivated to save. So let's jump right to this. I've got listeners out there, some that have saved very well, some that have saved some that say, you know what, I know I'm behind on this. I'm X number of years old and I should already be here, but I'm not. What are some of the things you can say to them? You have their full attention if they're listening. What can you say to them to I guess, first get them motivated?
So I guess I would say it's never too late to start saving. And the most important step is to start doing something. I think a lot of people get hung up because they don't feel like they have a lot of financial expertise. And it's a challenging problem if you feel like you're not really comfortable with making financial decisions. And so individuals will procrastinate. I like to joke that they're waiting for the savings fairy to come whisper in their ear and tell them what to do. And it's never going to happen. And this is a case where you don't want to let the better be the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
If you procrastinate hoping you're going to do it better in the future, you're actually going to be worse off. The most important thing is to start doing something today. If you're working for a company that offers a 401k plan, that really is the easiest and most convenient and often a financially compelling place to save. And if you are not in the position to have a job that offers a 401k plan, then set up some sort of an automatic deposit system on your own so that money is being transferred every month into an individual retirement account or some other savings vehicle so that you don't have to pay attention to it all the time, so that it happens automatically.
So this is not a case of analysis paralysis where people are, it's not that they're going, golly, there's so many good choices, I can't decide where I'm going to put my money, therefore I'm going to wait. This is simply inertia. They got to get out of their own way and just getting started and getting motivated. That sounds like it accounts for a lot of the fact that people don't put money away.
Yes, that's definitely what the research that my colleagues and I have done over the years suggests.
Well, I can tell those that are in that position that haven't, you know, even if they start with something they would consider to be, because I'm sure a lot of them think, well, what's the point? It's not very much money. Just getting started, it makes a big difference and will get you into a rhythm of savings and putting it away. And that's really the key, is to get any job, right? Any job. We're getting some stuff done at my house, and we needed to move some furniture around, and I needed to replace a section of carpet. And so we're all sitting around going, okay, well, I guess we need to get started. And because if we don't start, it's never going to get done. Next thing you know, we had it all finished.
Yeah. I think you raise another good point in there. Some people have a problem getting started because they don't know what to do. Other people have a problem getting started because they're so far behind,
yeah,
and they just kind of throw up their hands. They, you know, perhaps they meet with a financial advisor, or they fill out a tool online, and it says you need to be saving 12% of your income, and they're like, "Well, I can't possibly afford to save 12% of my income," and so they save nothing, zero. Mm-hmm. Well, even if you can't afford to save what you need to be saving to be completely on track, saving something is still better than saving nothing.
Yeah, if you
nothing.
Can't, exactly. If you can't do 12, do 8. If you can't do 8, do 2.
Do
can't
two,
do 2, do 1.
Do 2 and increase it by 1% every year when you get a pay increase.
There you go. All right, well, our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is Bridget Madrian. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk more. We've talked about what we need to do and we're going to talk about steps to get there, so stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Bridget Madrian is our guest today. She's a Harvard professor, and she's helping us understand some of the things that go on with people and their savings. And we talked about some of the challenges that people face. Now, here's another obvious question, Bridget. And the question is, there's lots of choices in the marketplace, but a lot of times people, they sit back and they go, I don't know where to start. I'm going to save, but I don't know where to start. Where are some of the resources that are available that you see? That is it a matter of opening up the phone book or looking at ads in the paper for a good financial planner? I mean, what are some of the things that people can do?
So as I mentioned before the break, if you have an employer that has a workplace savings plan, that is often the easiest and strategically the best place to start saving financially, because many employers offer a match. They're exercising a lot of fiduciary oversight over the savings plan, so they've selected a small set of investment options that are probably appropriate to the savings needs of most employees they have. So if you have an employer with a workplace savings plan, that is definitely the place to start. The other thing that everyone really needs is to have some sort of an emergency savings account,
mm-hmm.
probably not with their employer.
Yeah.
And, you know, recent studies suggest that, you know, close to half of the country doesn't even have $3,000 set aside for an emergency. But if you have a car repair or, a trip to the emergency room or a home repair, those things can easily add up to a couple of $1,000s.
Yeah, and for those people, that's not a case of it being inconvenient, but it's a major catastrophic event if you don't have the cash. And you can't go, it's very difficult and time-consuming. There's a big delay in trying to look to your 401k or other retirement plans based at work as your emergency fund. You can't do that.
And it's very expensive to go to other sources of credit. So people who don't have an emergency savings account set aside, if they, face one of these sudden expenses, they often have to go put money on their credit card. And because they can't pay off the bill all at once, they end up paying interest fees at, 18, 20, 22% for months or maybe even years in a row. If they happen to be late on a payment, they'll get hit with a late payment fee, or they'll turn to a payday lender.
Mm.
The evidence on how people use payday lending is that a sizable fraction of them end up rolling those loans over and over.
Yeah.
And can easily pay, several hundred dollars a year in finance charges by going to a payday lender. So it may seem like a stretch to put money aside into an emergency savings account, into some sort of a rainy day fund, but most people will be much better off in the long run because the cost of saving today is a lot less expensive than the cost of accessing these short-term credit markets in the future when you have an emergency that you're not prepared for.
You're exactly right, Bridget. I want to go back to your comment about the 401ks and taking it. I'll say from practical experience doing this work every day in the field, if you will, planning for clients, I'll tell you that if I have people come in and talk to me that are saving for retirement and they have access to a 401k, here's putting your money where your mouth is. I tell them I don't want to see a nickel of money to invest for them until they tell me they are maxing out their 401k. That means they are maxing out their elective contribution. So if they're allowed to put in 15%, I don't want to invest any money for them from their paycheck that can go into that 401k first, because it goes in, you don't pay tax on it, it can grow tax deferred, and you get interest on interest, which is really, really cool. And that's the way to do it. It's so easy too, because out of sight, out of mind, it doesn't go into your checkbook. Well, it's a little bit harder to spend.
Yeah. And if you don't have a 401k, here's a useful strategy that would work for many, many people who don't have a 401k account, and that is to take your tax refund and save your tax refund. So 70% of Americans get a tax refund every April. The size of the average refund is something like $2,500. Now, that's not going to fund your retirement, but we were just talking about having an emergency savings fund, that will fund your emergency savings fund. But many people, they do their taxes, they figure out they're getting a refund, and what they start thinking is, well, how am I going to spend that money? I'm going to go buy a big screen
TV. Well, that's because spending that is going to give them a dose of morphine in their brain, and it's going to feel really, really good versus the feeling of something that seems so far away for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, and after you've filled out your taxes, you need that. So, do a little bit.
Yeah.
Go out and get some ice cream so you
there
feel
you go.
Good, and then earmark your tax refund for an emergency, rainy day fund, a savings account. If you've got that taken care of, then earmark it for your kids' college or set it aside for a down payment on a car. But think of that as the government is helping you save, and use that money for savings, not for immediate consumption.
Amen to that. Bridget Madrian is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take another quick break. When we get back, Bridget and I are going to talk about how to continue to improve the savings process. Stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply, or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances.
an effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Bridget Madrian is our guest today. She's Aetna Professor of Public Policy and Corporate Management at the Harvard Kennedy School. It's a mouthful, but you know what? It's not as much of a mouthful as sometimes people getting all twisted up on trying to plan for their financial future, Bridget. I think that sometimes people think they have to have a law or finance degree to figure out financial stuff, but it's really not hard if you just slow down and take it a piece at a time. So if somebody's gotten into a habit of savings, then what's the next step? Do they try to up that? Do they try to pay down debt? Do they try to, you know, we establish that emergency fund? What are some of the things you see that in your research that helps people move along and build more going forward?
Yeah, so once you've started, if you're not saving at the rate that you need to reach your retirement savings goals, say, or perhaps you have some short-term goals, then increase your savings rate a little bit over time. And research has shown that psychologically, a really easy way to do this is to increase your savings rate concurrent with when you're getting a pay increase at work, because then you're not going to notice that you're saving more because your paycheck isn't actually going to go down. A number of companies now actually offer this feature with their retirement savings plan, usually under a term like contribution escalation, automatic escalation, something like that. So that's a great thing to sign up for if your employer offers it, and if not, pick a point in time every year when you get a pay increase. Maybe maybe January, the beginning of the year, maybe your birthday, when you're going to sit down and slowly increase your savings rate up to the level where it needs to be.
You know, one of the questions people have, Bridget, is they go, "Well, I don't know what that number needs to be. How much do I need to put away?" Okay, I get the idea. You guys want us to save more. Okay, we get it. There's two ways to look at this. Either we try to figure out that magical number that needs to be put in, and we have to make assumptions about, you know, a rate of growth or rate of interest we're going to have on that money until retirement, or, which is often something I've recommended, is let's figure out how much you can pack away while still meeting your other obligations, and then do that and see where we are down the road. What's your view on that?
Like I said, the most important thing is to start saving something. And I think for many people, the latter approach is an easier way.
It's more practical, right?
To ease into that. And, you know, unfortunately, figuring out exactly how much you save is a little bit of an art. It's not a precise science.
It can be a real avoidance technique, you know, if we want to play psychology games with ourselves is, you know, I'm going to sit down and I'm really going to figure out exactly how much I need to save. And I'm going to go through and get online and play around with all these online projectors. And I'm going to just start putting money away.
Start putting something away. And, you know, I think many people, if they're saving somewhere between 10 and 15% of their income, they're probably going to be okay. And maybe they end up saving a little too little, but you know what? If you've still got a decent amount of money at retirement, you'll be okay.
Well, and you know what? I agree with you, Bridget. In fact, I had this a real-life example of exactly what you're describing the other day. I had a couple come in. They're younger. They're in their 40s. They are still got quite a number of years before they retire. And they said, well, we're putting this much away in our retirement plans, and are we going to be okay? You know, is my number good? And I did some calculations. It wasn't hard. I got out my HP 12C, cranked it up, and we did some different calculations and different scenarios. And you know what? They're going to be okay. They're going to be okay. But they got to be putting it away to be okay.
They have to be consistent. The other thing that I think most households need to think about is you need to put the money away, and then you need to leave it there.
Yeah.
So there's a big temptation, and there are lots of easy ways to get at your money
once you've
set it aside. So if you look at savings behavior in 401k plans, at any point in time, about 20% of people have borrowed money against their account.
Mm.
If you look over a longer period of time, say 6 or 7 years, half of people have borrowed money against their account. And when individuals change jobs, 30 to 40% of people take all of the money out of the account when they change the job.
Now, don't tell me they cash it out.
Yes, they cash it out.
You're not talking about rolling it over to an IRA or another?
I'm talking about cashing it out completely.
Ugh.
And, I mean, that just undoes all of the good work you've been doing towards saving. And if you were thinking about how much do people need to save to be ready for retirement, let's just hypothetically say that number was 10%. Well, if you were taking money out of your plan every time you change jobs, you would need to be setting aside much more than 10%.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're going to raid the piggy bank, you got to put more money in there in the first place if you're not going to leave it all there.
You know, I love the commercials on television. Ron Popeil of Ronco fame used to have a little thing he would say. He'd set that rotisserie chicken up and he'd say, and get the audience to say it with him, set it and forget it. So I think people need to do that with their retirement money, is set it up in there and forget about it and leave it there and don't mess with it. Doesn't mean you ignore it, just don't take any money out. And we're going to take another quick break, Bridget. When we come back, I want to talk with you about what you do with that money while it's invested in your 401k. We'll be right back after this quick break.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Bridget Madrian has been on the line with me. She's Aetna Professor of Public Policy at Harvard, and we've talked about household savings and trying to put money away for retirement. We're all in it together. We need to all pull our weight, so to speak, right? And the next thing we need to get into is a little bit about investor behavior. And when we've got these 401k and other types of accounts that we're saving our money in, we need to make sure we're diversified, right, Bridget? We need to make sure we are saving that money, but it's diversified, right?
Absolutely. And the biggest mistake that we see is individuals who are working at a publicly traded company, and the employer offers employer stock as one of the investment options in its savings plan menu, and employees put sometimes all of their money into employer stock, and the employer is directing the matching contribution into employer stock, and they are completely undiversified. And if the company does well, you know, it can work out really well. But unfortunately, if the company doesn't do well, in the extreme case, if they go bankrupt or go out of business, and we've seen this in some very high profile, visible, you know, news stories in the last decade, then, you know, many times employees lose everything. Not only do they lose all of their retirement savings, but many times they lose their job as well.
Well, you want me to say it or you want to say it? Case in point, Enron.
Right. But we saw it more recently with the financial crisis in 2008. You know, the employees at Bear Stearns in Wall Street. These are Wall Street employees. You know, many of them had a lot of money in employer stock, and the company, you know, went bust and they lost everything. So,
well, you know, and I want to dispel a myth that probably some people have in their heads. And I think a lot of people, especially when things have gotten kind of rough, people say, well, if I don't put the money into the employee, the company's stock I'm working for, then, you know, they might think I'm being disloyal or I don't believe in the company. And, you know, I think very few employers really even have time to stop and look at how you're allocating your money inside the 401k and judge you on it. You know, you need it. You've got to take care of yourself first. And you, if the employer stock is an option, maybe 10%, no more than that. If it was up to me, I'd even do less. But be diversified, because Bridget's got it right. Bad things happen. You don't want all your money there.
Absolutely. I think one of the newer vehicles that's really attractive for novice investors who aren't really comfortable making decisions about how to invest their money are target date retirement funds. So these are funds that you would see in your investment menu with names like the, you know, the Retirement 2020 Fund, the Retirement 2025 Fund, the Retirement 2030 Fund. And these are investment funds that are well-diversified across a range of different investments like stocks and bonds and money market mutual funds. and they're professionally managed, and they're managed in such a way that the amount of risk that the investment is taking is decreasing over time as you get closer and closer to your retirement date. So if you thought you were going to be retiring in 2030, the 2030 fund would be set up so that, early on, it's investing fairly aggressively to get high returns because you've got a long time horizon until retirement. But as you get closer and closer to retirement, the managers of that fund are changing the investment allocation so that it becomes more conservative and less sensitive to the ups and downs of the market, so that you're not facing so many swings, and you kind of know what to count on when you're going to get towards retirement. Those funds tend to have slightly higher fees than other funds in the portfolio, but I think that if you're really skittish about choosing an investment allocation, they can give you a lot of peace of mind, and the extra fees may very well be worth it.
Well, a good analogy, Bridget, would be to say, it's kind of like having an autopilot on your boat that's going to dock your ship for you, because it might be on the throttle may be wide open going into the port, but then when you get close, it slows down automatically, eases up to the dock, and so that you don't just go crashing right into the dock and automatically slows you down as you get closer. I think for a lot of people that aren't as comfortable or as familiar, that's not a bad option at all, because, sometimes employers with 401ks, it's good to have choices. Sometimes they give you too many choices. If you've got 200 choices available in the 401k, where do you start?
Absolutely.
It might be that one of these lifestyle or target date funds is a good place, or at least part of the money, because you can mix it up. You could have part of it in that target date, and then you say, okay, well, I'm going to half over there, and then I'm going to pick some of the funds myself for the other half, but at least have some of it set up that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the bigger challenge is for individuals who have rolled their money over into an IRA, where they're really in control of everything. They don't have an investment manager who's winnowing down the investment options, who's monitoring the fees and things like that. And I think when employees leave their jobs, they get a lot of inducements, a lot of marketing to roll the money over into an IRA. I think that's another area where, some employees aren't necessarily, or some individuals aren't necessarily making the decision that would be best for them. Oftentimes they would be better served leaving the money in the former employer's plan, or rolling the money into a new employer's plan, where someone's exercising some oversight on the investment options in the plan, as opposed to putting it into an IRA, where you might have thousands of different investment options, and you're paying retail fees because there aren't any there aren't huge balances and someone negotiating lower fees. So I think that's another area where individuals maybe want to think twice. I'd be interested, what kind of advice do you give your clients when they're changing jobs about rolling the money into an IRA, keeping it in an employer plan?
Yeah, I like the idea of keeping it in the plan. Now, if they're getting closer to retirement, we might want to look at more choices. I was thinking of an analogy as you were setting that up, Bridget, and it's kind of like going to the restaurant, and there's the buffet you can get for $10, and if we're not careful, with too many choices, we end up getting sick. We end up eating too much, or we end up making a mistake with our choices. And I think it's okay to have a lot of choices as long as you've got really good advice. So I've been comfortable recommending people roll into an IRA if we're, getting closer to retirement. But for the person that, if it's a smaller dollar amount, or if they're continuing to work, it may be better, like you said, to roll that, either leave it where it is because you don't have to roll it. You can leave it with the employer, or roll it into the next employer and keep that money, as you said, under that prudent management. Bridget, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thanks for being on the program with me.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bridget Madrian's been our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, Aetna Professor of Public Policy and Corporate Management at Harvard Kennedy School. And whatever you do, save and keep on savings. Thanks for being with us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
We
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.